Live from the studios of Town Square Media in Northfield, it's Hurley in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, thanks very much. When I tell you one of my absolute favorite people at Deborah, I had the opportunity to spend, several years back, but a lot of quality hang time with Dr. Rafael Corbisiero. And I'm telling you right up front, in fact, a friend of the program, guy I've known for a long time, needed the services of Dr. C. And he wrote me this morning, Bruce, I hope you're listening because I know you're a big fan of Dr. C as well. When I tell you Dr. C is very, very special, I'm not kidding you. He is the division director of electrophysiology and pacing at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. He is a cardiac electrophysiologist, residency, internal medicine, New York Medical College, Westchester Medical Center, Valhalla, New York. Specialty training, cardiology, interventional cardiology, New York Medical College, Westchester Medical Center. Electrophysiology, Bay State Medical Center, Western Campus of Tufts, Springfield, Massachusetts. Triple threat board certified, internal medicine. Cardiovascular disease, clinical cardiac electrophysiology. Special interests, expanding indications for device therapy, pacemakers, defibrillators, which we're going to be talking about, a very important topic this hour of Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. And it really is, you hear people say all the time, AFib, it's atrial fibrillation or AFib. Very important topic. And if you let us get the first couple of questions going, and then you can jump in. We're going to keep it, though, on the topic of atrial fibrillation. And it's sometimes, no matter how many times I say that, I don't know why, but people go off the focus of the program. But it's important to stay on focus because we pick a specific topic so that we can really impart a lot of important information to you. Additional special interests. Resynchronization therapy, heart failure therapy, complex ablation. He is an accomplished lecturer as well, and he is also published, Dr. Rafael Corbisiero, and he should be here in about the next 30 to 60 seconds, if all is well. We did confirm yesterday that the program was on. I always check when it's right before a major holiday, and with July 4th on the Saturday, obviously, tomorrow is a holiday for most people. Always Hurley, never late. And I was talking behind your back, Dr. C, so you just have to trust me. But you can go to the podcast and you can listen to my outstanding introduction. It was quite good. And I do want to say at least this much for Dr. C to hear it. I share with our audience that I had the privilege a number of years ago to spend a lot of quality hang time with you when you were kind enough to show me all of your areas of responsibility. And I was just blown away by the care and the concern that you show for your patients and the great job that you do. So we have a little less now than 30 minutes to make it count. We're going to talk about atrial fibrillation with Dr. C, who joins us now. Dr. C, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
I am well. How are you doing, Harry?
I'm doing well, and so happy we have this time together. So on the topic of AFib, is it a big deal? How common is it?
Well, AFib is a big deal. Atrial fibrillation is the most common rhythm problem in the world. Almost 2% of the planet has this problem, and unfortunately, it's more common as we get older, and as we know, we are getting older and older as the years go by.
So it's the kind of thing, are you predisposed and you don't even know it necessarily, and then later in life it can present? How does this work?
Well, it can be associated with anything, but it also can be an isolated problem just associated with age. We are all sort of at risk for it because of the way the electrical system is built in our bodies. There are certain areas that become more active, and if they become active in the later parts of life, they can throw off the normal rhythm and throw your heart into atrial fibrillation.
What do you need to worry about if you have this?
So the biggest issue with this, you know, for the most part, atrial fibrillation is not a life-threatening rhythm disorder like the other ones that we deal with. But the biggest thing that people have to appreciate it is that if you have atrial fibrillation, that puts you at a 5 times increase for possibility of stroke. That's what we want to prevent.
Wow. I know we're going to get into it, but I just feel like I have to say this now. Are there warning symptoms? Is it a like a flutter or something? What do you feel that you have this?
Well, it can be very subjective. So everybody is different. Every patient is different. If you do feel things, usually what people will feel, right, the classic symptoms that we have for fibrillation is that the heart rate becomes very irregular. So people will describe a rumbling or a tumbling in their chest, like their heart is beating kind of all over the place. That's the classic. But this rhythm problem can also be very, very subtle. Remember that it happens as we get older. And there are many times when I talk to my patients and, you know, they just say, well, I just don't have enough energy, or, you know, my mentation is just kind of off, and they all attribute it to, well, I guess I'm just getting older. And then when you work them up, you find that they have atrial fibrillation. And it also goes all the way to some patients don't feel this at all. Well, I can't tell you how many patients I've seen in the emergency room with a heart rate completely out of control, and they feel fine. They have no idea that they have this problem. So its presentation is very variable. That's why the patients, you know, and you letting people know, we have to kind of be aware of this.
You are listening to the always listenable Dr. Rafael Corbusiero. Dr. C is the Division Director, Electrophysiology and Pacing at DeBora Heart and Lung Center. And I did share just about a minute or two before you arrived your complete impressive CV, and my fondness for you. And Dr. C is also a cardiac electrophysiologist. Are palpitations ever something that could be a warning symptom for AFib?
Yes. Yes. Now, palpitation can be anything from just a couple of skip beats from anywhere in the heart. So they may be a warning sign, but that could be one of the symptoms that may be leading you up to atrial fibrillation.
Does caffeine play a role in atrial fibrillation?
So that's a great question. The FDA actually looked at this, and honestly, it turns out that, you know, for some people, if caffeine bothers you, then yes. But in most people, it really didn't contribute much to atrial fibrillation.
Are you put on limitation if you have AFib?
So the only limitation really is common sense and how you feel. So if you have the rhythm problem and you're feeling it, in other words, you're in atrial fibrillation, your heart rate's very irregular, it might be rapid, you don't feel good, then obviously you're limited. If you otherwise feel fine, then we won't limit you. Okay.
It sounds like I'm contradicting because I said limitation, but I'll give a specific. Can you drive?
Yes. Yes. You can drive with this rhythm problem. You're not precluded from having a driver's license.
All right. For our listeners of the Hurley in the Morning program, this is the sexy part of the program. Can you have sex?
Well, that's yes. I'm assuming that you can, barring other issues.
Okay. Fair enough. Let it not be said I won't ask the tough questions of Dr. C. What conditions are associated with AFib?
So the one condition that we can't do anything about is just age. So as we get older, it becomes more prevalent. Once we pass the age of 70, you know, 20-30% of us will have this problem in one fashion or another. The other issues that can make atrial fibrillation worse or more prevalent is high blood pressure, diabetes. Those are two common risk factors with it. And then the other things that we look for, which especially goes sort of undertreated, is patients with sleep apnea. Mm. So if you do have sleep apnea, that can certainly make rhythm problems worse and bring out atrial fibrillation.
And it just so happens DeBora has an amazing sleep center, so this could be a thing where you would get worked up at the sleep center and go through your area and really see exactly where you stand and how you're presenting.
Yeah, that's right. That's part of our protocol. When we evaluate anybody for atrial fibrillation, before we go, you know, to attack the problem ourselves, we work the patient up in every way. And I can say that the majority of the time, they're going at least for a sleep evaluation. You know, and I can't tell you how many times that our guys here have found sleep apnea, they treated it, and it makes our job a lot easier.
And then maybe for the first time, and who knows, for the longest time, somebody actually is enjoying restorative sleep again.
Yeah.
People put up with a lot. They don't even know it.
Right. That's the thing is this is, you know, sometimes it's as subtle as this. It's, you know, you really have sleep apnea and need to be treated.
To make an appointment, we always want to mention several times during Dr. C's program, demanddebora.org is awesome. You can do things right from there in terms of setting up your appointment request. If you prefer to speak to someone, you can call 800-555-1990. So that's demanddebora.org, 800-555-1990, and you'll be prompted for appointment on the phone system. The topic with Dr. C this half hour of Debora Heart and Lung Center Presents is atrial fibrillation. This is something that you and I have talked about. We've been doing this for many years together, both TV and radio. Can you use a microwave if you get a pacemaker?
Yes, absolutely. My joke is you can use it, you just can't get in it. So, But the microwaves and the pacemakers are protected from each other. That hasn't been an issue for over 20 years.
Let's do a sidebar, and it's so amazing because you and I did a program that long ago when the microwave was an issue. I remember it. I also remember what the size of the device used to be, like a pack of cigarettes sticking out of your chest. Now, I know it's a little bit off topic, but you are the man at Debora when it comes to devices. The pacemaker is smaller than it's ever been. I understand the batteries are better than they've ever been. Your ability to communicate remotely with the equipment, the technology, never better. It's extraordinary, isn't it, Dr. C?
It really is, and I emphasize this a lot in what we do. You know, again, as a sidebar topic, you know, medications are really tough on a lot of our patients, right? They cost a lot of money, they have a lot of side effects, and, you know, frankly, in general, you know, our patients are on too many medications. If we can offer them a non pharmacological therapy, something that's more effective, and they don't have to take a pill every day or twice a day, really that's where I would like to see us, you know, go.
I can't remember because it's been a little while since we were last together. Is the size of a pacemaker about the size of a silver dollar now?
Yeah, actually a little bit less. Yeah, they're getting to the point of about a size of a half dollar.
Wow, amazing.
And there are things coming down the road that we've already started with. There are some pacemakers. At this point, it's very, very simple, but there is a pacemaker that really looks like a small bullet that's actually placed inside the heart with no wires or incisions at the chest.
Oh, my goodness.
And they call that a leadless pacemaker. Right now that's in the initial stages, so it only comes in a very simple form. But that's something that might come down the road and be helpful in a small percentage of patients, you know, that might have other issues that you don't, you know, can't get to them otherwise.
One last follow-up on this, and we'll get back on topic. We're going to take the only break that we take in just a second after I squeeze this in. The battery life of a pacemaker right now, if we're talking about traditional pacemaker that you're installing, how long do they last now?
So usually we get a range of 7 to 10 years, depending upon what they're doing. Now, understand that pacemakers today have come in many, many shapes and sizes and different variations. So a simple pacemaker, sometimes we can get that to last 10 to 15 years. But as we try to help patients more with the more complicated devices, like we've talked about in the past, those special resynchronization pacemakers to help patients with weak hearts, those work all the time. So those sometimes last 5 to 7 years.
Excellent. As always, the content from Dr. C. Dr. Rafael Corbisiero, the Division Director, Electrophysiology and Pacing at Debora Heart and Lung Center, continues. Today's topic is atrial fibrillation. If you have a question about AFib, you can join the program, 609-407-1450. If you, in listening to Dr. C, if this is all sounding pretty familiar and you want to check out exactly where you presently stand, either go to demanddeborah.org or you can call 800-555-1990. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go away. With Dr. C, respectfully yours, I am.
Hurley in the morning. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. For complete contest rules, visit WPGTalkRadio.com.
Hey, thanks very much. Welcome back. Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents the distinguished Dr. Rafael Corbusiero, Division Director, Electrophysiology and Pacing, very commonly, legendarily known as Dr. C. It's pretty cool when just one initial and like everybody knows who you are. I want to be as famous as you someday. I can't say Dr. H, but just H. You say Dr. C, and you don't have to say anymore. Let's get to your calls, Doctor. I don't want to embarrass you and make you have to even comment with what I just said. Welcome to the Dr. C Show. You're on the air, and your question, please.
Good morning, Harry. It's Tom. Hello, Doctor.
Good morning, Tom.
Hi. Good morning.
Harry, first of all, just a second, belated happy birthday. You're the 19th, I'm the 20th.
I know. Happy birthday to you, sir.
Thank you, and congratulations on your anniversary. Well-deserved accolades.
Thank you. What Tom's referring to, Dr. C, on July 1st, we entered year 29 of the Hurley in the Morning program, 29th year.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Congratulations.
Doesn't seem possible. Thank you, Dr. C. Tom,
so fast.
Yeah, I know, and it has flown by. It's incredibly flown by. And most of it, 25 years of it, we've been with Deborah, over 25 years, I think. Tom, I know you have a question on atrial fibrillation because you've called in. What's your question?
Yes. Yes, I do. By the way, Dr. Harry has national credentials.
My question is,
I have AFib, and I'm just curious with the dialogue that I just heard, is it some of the treatment come down between an ablation or a pacemaker?
So the treatment options for atrial fibrillation are usually the standard three, which is there's medications that can be used. Sometimes a pacemaker is needed, but the approach that's the most benefit is really the ablation procedure. That's what we're finding out, having been doing the ablations for the last 10, 15 years, is that really is the most effective way to treat atrial fibrillation to help you maintain your normal sinus rhythm.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes, I've been on medication for it, and I've seen an ablation specialist, and he said that at this particular time I was not a candidate for it because of the infrequency of the occasions.
I don't know the specifics of it, but I will tell you that the way that we're thinking about it now, okay, we are treating atrial fibrillation earlier and earlier. So in the old days, some doctors would say, let's use a medication and then see how you do. And then if the AFib keeps happening, then maybe we'll think about the ablation. And that their thinking was, you know, go from the, you know, less traumatic to the more traumatic with time. But what we're finding now with the data that's just been released over the last year is that you are better off in the long run getting the ablation up front earlier than waiting for the AFib to keep happening. And the analogy that I'll give you is, you know, if God forbid anybody has an issue with a lump, okay, and there's a concern for cancer, nobody in their right mind waits to see what happens with that lump, okay? They treat it aggressively. Why? Because patients do better down the road. So that's how we're treating AFib now. Once you have your AFib, we know it's going to come back. That's your diagnosis. The earlier you treat it, especially with the ablation procedure, the better you will do in the long run. So that's kind of my hard opinion right now about that.
Aren't you glad you called in, Tom?
I absolutely am, Harry. That's a very common sense approach to the analogy is something that I can really relate to, and I certainly appreciate it.
DemandDeborah.org, Tom.
Yep. Harry, thank you. Doctor, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, Tom. Happy birthday to you.
You're welcome.
609-407. Yes, you got it. 609-407-1450, an open phone line. If you have a question for Dr. C on our topic today on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Rafael Corbusiero, the topic is atrial fibrillation. You're on the air with Dr. C. Your question, please.
Hi, Dr. C. I have I had a pacemaker at Deborah, and I have Parkinson's. And I was wondering if the Parkinson's exacerbates the AFib.
Typically not. Typically that's his own issue. It doesn't make atrial fibrillation worse.
Oh, okay. And I was told to get that ablation, but should I still get it? I'm 84.
It would depend on you know, taking a look at everything, but you can consider it. Our ablations at Deborah are done with a stereotaxis robotic unit, and just so you understand, that ablation that we do is much, much safer than the other ablations that are done in the area, because with the stereotaxis robotics, the wire that we introduce is very, very flimsy, because it's not being manipulated or pushed around by our hands. It's being steered by a computer with magnets. But the wire is so flimsy that it really can't damage the heart. So since we've been doing that, we're much more aggressive because we feel it's safer. So you still may be a candidate for it. It's something that if you come in, ask to talk to me, and we'll talk about it further.
Okay, thanks so much.
You have a great day and a nice holiday weekend, and please do give Dr. C a call. I'm going to give you the phone number, 1-800-555-1990. If you're on technology, your phone or iPad or a desktop laptop, and you want to go through your computer, demanddeborah.org. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Rafael Corbusiero, a.k.a. Dr. C., is atrial fibrillation. What I love about your program, Dr. C, I mean, there's two great examples why this program is so important. That's very well two people that you can help. The first caller, our friend Tom, who didn't even know that he was a potential candidate because he thought he was too soon. I loved being educated by you on the topic that And it only stands to reason, everything we always talk about on Deborah Heart and Lung Center or any medical issue, we always talk about early detection, right? Earlier, the better.
Right.
Earlier
right.
Usually means best result, correct?
Correct.
So good stuff.
And to be preventative, right?
Yeah. To the gentlelady, get a hold of Dr. C and then take it from there. Dr. C, and I knew how fast your program was going to go. We're down to about 5 minutes and still a lot of content we want to get in. How does your healthcare deal with the issue? How does healthcare deal with that?
So healthcare, you know, in general, you understand that it's a high number of hospital admissions are because of atrial fibrillation. So they have been actually turning the point with us in regards to allowing us to do more and more ablations, okay? Because that really is the definitive treatment, I think, as of 2020. So they've been good. So the healthcare and the insurance companies have recognized this. So that's what's allowing for the atrial fibrillation ablation to grow. It is the number one ablation that's done in this country.
I've noticed this is true, and you're sort of indicating it there. There used to be declination for things that just made sense, because if you get declined something like this, then you're going to get sicker. And if you get sicker, then other things will get approved that ultimately will cost maybe even more. And it just makes sense to handle it earlier and in the best way. That was very encouraging what you shared in that regard. And I know there's other folks that want to speak with you as well. 609-407-1450 phone lines are open at 31 minutes past the hour with Dr. C. Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents today's topic, atrial fibrillation. Your question for Dr. C, your mic is on. You're on the air.
Yes, my question is, first let me explain. I have left branch bundle block. Will that automatically lead to AFib?
So no. So atrial fibrillation is an issue with the electrical system in the top part of the heart. The left bundle branch block is
in the bottom.
As the signal travels down to the bottom, what that means is that your signal goes to the right heart faster than it goes to the left heart. So that's what gives you that left bundle branch block. So those two are kind of two separate issues.
Thank you very much. Nice talking with you.
Thanks for calling in. Good question.
You're welcome.
And you got a great answer from the best in the business. Dr. C, should you see a specialist, in other words, someone like you, an electrophysiologist?
For if you have the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation, I think you owe it to yourself to at least get an opinion from an electrophysiologist on the subject. It's not a knock on the primary caregivers or cardiologist, but really to discuss all of it, you should discuss it with an electrophysiologist because he can tell you more about the treatment of the atrial fibrillation itself as well as the other things that we can do for the prevention of stroke. And the electrophysiologist, you know, is really the expert on atrial fibrillation.
I think the last gentlelady's question inadvertently touches this, but I don't want to leave it at just she talked about some left bundle branch and you talked about, well, this is at the top. Where does AFib come from in your heart?
So in 95% of us, we're all built the same way. From the top left part of the heart, the left atrium, there are veins that plug in from the lung. It turns out that in those veins, in the sleeves of those veins, are really the rogue atrial fibrillation signals. They become more active as we get older, and if they get out of those veins and into the heart, it can throw off the whole electrical system in the top part of the heart. And it throws you out of normal rhythm and into this AFib.
Ooh. So that touches on where I wanted to go next. This can affect you hear you have AFib and then, okay, well, I have atrial fibrillation. This can affect other areas as well?
So it depends. If you have atrial fibrillation, right, I said, you know, obviously one of the things that can affect is the possibility of stroke, which is the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
But some hearts don't like being in atrial fibrillation. So when they go into the abnormal rhythm, the heart rate can become very irregular, you know, usually rapid, and some hearts tend to fall apart with this.
Wow.
In other words, the bottom part, you know, the part that does the pumping for the body, you know, the real squeezing, some bottom parts don't like AFib, and it starts to weaken. And then if the bottom part gets weak, now you have an added problem that makes things 10 times worse.
Wow. We have time to squeeze in one more question. It's a digital question, and it just came in just in the nick of time because I know you've got to get going momentarily. Dr. C, this is a question from a dad. My daughter had the ablation at age 15 due to AFib. What are the odds of it redeveloping again later?
So at age 15, it'd be very unlikely that your daughter had primary AFib. What happens in younger people is they can have some of the common circuits that cause a regular rapid heartbeat called a supraventricular tachycardia or SVT, and sometimes the SVT can degenerate into AFib. The treatment she probably got was an ablation to take care of an abnormal circuit, and that usually has a very good outcome and very unlikely that AFib is going to happen again in her.
Glad we had the opportunity to address the dad's question. Time just to give you a closing comment. Anything you would like to leave your listeners with, Dr. C, on today's topic?
You know, atrial fibrillation, it needs to be taken seriously because of its consequences, and really you need to talk to an electrophysiologist about it, not just a primary caregiver, not just a cardiologist. That I can't emphasize that enough.
Dr. C, it's a privilege to present you. I love doing the program with you. For all of our listeners, if you are dealing with issues, you heard a lot of content in the past 32 minutes. If there's something that sounds like it's you, don't suffer in silence. You can reach out to request an appointment. You can either call 800-555-1990 or on the web at demanddebora.com. hurleyinthemorning.org. Dr. C, love you, man. Have a great day, and happy holiday to you, sir.
Happy holiday. It went by so fast again, Harry.
I know, because you're the best. Thanks, Dr. C.
All right, have a great one.
You too, sir. Be well. Dr. Rafael Corbisiero, best in his field. Trust me on that.